had to have a range day.
Yeah, I saw that. So, you were doing some ski. I'd love to go ski shooting, man. I miss that so much.
And it's funny because I don't have a long barrel shotgun. Like, I don't have a hunting shotgun.
Right.
I've got an anti-personnel. Call it a tactical. It's just short barrel.
I got one over there.
Short barrel Mossberg 500, you know, just traditional cop shotgun.
Right. But this is the best for home defense.
Yeah, absolutely.
In my opinion, so.
Well, but so my buddies were like, "Hey, let's go shoot." I'm like, "Okay, cool." And I need to get a long barreled one, but I brought out my little tack, and I'm using Collins break open double barrel, you know, for mostly. But I bring that one out because I always get made fun of, like, "Oh, you're gonna take out some skeet with that." I'll tell you what, bro, I'll take out some skeet with that. It's like I can get pretty surgical with that thing, and. So we're out there shooting, you know, just flinging clays. We go over to the other little thing, you know, American, where you put in the token and they, you know, you go the circuit. I'm like, man, I need some practice. I was not doing well, but we had a really good time just out there. Weather was beautiful, and it's like they've got the 1,000 yard or the 800 yard berms.
Yeah,
so. Like, you're in this kind of a valley sort of thing where the wind's just kind of blowing down on you. It's like, oh, it's so nice. It's so cool. It's so nice. I'm trying to get out there. I'm trying to burn up as much ammo as I can before it gets hot.
Right.
Because it's just getting ridiculous. Like, it'll be a hot summer. But
I miss skeet shooting a lot, man. And, you know, I used to show up with my duck hunting gun. And these guys would all have their, you know, $2,000 over unders and everything laughing at me. And then I'd do 85 out of 100 on sporting clays, and they'd realize that I've been doing this for a while.
Right, well,
this is the gun I'm used to shooting at ducks. I can shoot sporting clays with it pretty good, too.
Well, true. You know, like, and Colin's got a nice 1100, little semi automatic
Remington. Yeah, Remington, yeah.
But he's got it's not Benelli, it's. It's another.
Is it Yildiz or
no? It's another Italian, but it's a break open up, over and under, and it's a beautiful gun.
I used to have a Benelli Super Black Eagle.
I really enjoy it, but he choked it a little bit, so it's a little harder to hit those birds.
Right.
But screw it, you know. It's like, but
next time you go, are you set up to where, you know, at the skeet stations you have the different spots you can stand in to shoot from? What we used to do is we put two people on one square, and we do something called Cajun doubles. And the way it worked is, like, let's say the clay comes out from the left. The person on the left shoots first, and you got to try to hit it to where you leave a piece big enough for the next person to hit it.
Nice.
That used to be fun, dude. We burned some shells doing that shit. The Cajun doubles was a lot of fun.
Yeah, we would do... well, it was funny because my brother-in-law's cousin brought his new girlfriend out, and she'd never shot before. I don't think she'd ever shot a gun before. So we were on the machine, you know, the self-shooting before it shoots for you. Just you pull the launcher. And she's shooting and she's missing. And she's like, I don't know. And I told her, you know, because everybody's being encouraging and stuff. But I was like, look, don't worry about missing. Just keep shooting till you hit it. And once you hit it, you will have dialed in and you'll know how to hit the rest.
Right.
And then she smoked us on the course. she hit the most out of all of us. I was like, damn, hell yeah. That's pretty cool.
So I used to shoot every week because at Halliburton, there was a skeet range that we owned. So I was able to shoot every Wednesday night. I was out shooting with customers and everything. So I got pretty good there for a little while.
I love shooting. I call it recoil therapy.
Yeah.
Because I popped two. I nailed two, I wouldn't say they were hard shots, but they were clean. Like, both the skeets just disintegrated in the air. And I popped and it ejected and the smoke was coming out. And I, like, took a whiff. She, like, looked at me all weird. I was like, hey, you shoot enough, you'll get into that. Pop two more in there. Let's go.
Yeah, they're done listening to us talk about shooting, I think.
Let's get into episode 80. We started off talking about shooting and a badass woman who was shooting.
Yep.
So we're going to talk about some badass women today. It is 4:23. Hope your 4:20 celebrations went off without a hitch. What's better than 420? If you miss 420, what happens?
What? I'm not sure.
You go on the 22nd because it's 422.
That's a good one.
Not that we would dabble in any of that shit, but it's funny jokes. We live in an internet age. You start typing in April 20 anything, and it pops up with all kinds of drug culture references that we we do not endorse. We just laugh at. Anyway, episode 80, 423, Badass Women. This was your idea. What do you want to talk about badass women-wise? What's the idea behind this episode?
Well, I was thinking of badass women in horror movies, but the reason that it was brought up is because of the recent passing of a, you call it character actress, but definitely an actress that most people, while they might not be familiar with the name, they're familiar with the actress herself, but Debbie Lee Carrington passed away, who was a longtime actress and stunt woman. I remember her best as the little person prostitute in Total Recall, who, whenever shit went down, she jumped up on the table with a machine gun, fully automatic machine gun, and just started taking bad guys out. So,
right.
She, she's played a lot of stuff, man. She was 58 years old when she passed away.
That's young.
She was in Total Recall. She was in Batman Returns, Scary Movie 3. She was Chucky in Seed of Chucky as part of her stunt woman work. She also did Bride of Chucky, Leprechaun in the Hood, New Nightmare, Spawn, and Van Helsing. She's been in a whole bunch of movies. She's also been in Buffy the Vampire Slayer and in Dexter.
She was either in Seinfeld.
Either in acting roles or in stunt roles. So she had a great, great Hollywood career. She will definitely be missed.
And she's...
She's kind of hot, too.
Well, yeah, her face, obviously very recognizable, and her voice, specifically.
Right.
And, yeah, if you don't know who she is, look her up. She's... Well, she's one of a kind, and she'll certainly be missed. Well, before we get deep into the show, let's talk about some old business.
Gotta do it.
This is kind of some old business, but it's pertinent. Crack yourself open a tasty brew and listen to Scary Dad talk about. On this date in 1516, the Rheinreichsgebot.
Say it three times real fast.
Rheinreichsgebot, the German beer purity law was passed. Wherein they said that you could only make beer out of water, barley, and hops.
Because of that, I'm watching Beer Fest tonight, just so you know.
They did not know about yeast back then, so yeast was not an ingredient.
Beer was kind of flat.
Well, yeah, it was like didn't get it to ferment without the yeast. But right. they hadn't discovered yeast in 1516, which is odd that they... It's.
Did they just not know it because for the process? The yeast existed. I mean, they weren't eating unleavened bread everywhere they went. I mean, they had yeast, I'm sure.
But a lot of yeast happens naturally.
Okay.
So it wasn't a separate ingredient, and they didn't know why it happened. What bread rises because you know you put all the ingredients together and you knead it and everything, and then you set it and yeast builds up, and yeast occurs naturally in the ingredients, and. It's like, in fact, over this weekend, I just bottled a case of mead. I made a case of mead. Well, how you make mead, and we talked about it on kind of the how-to shows as far as the cider, but literally how you make mead is you take honey, you melt it into water, and you add yeast, and then you let it bubble until it stops bubbling, right. And then you have mead, which is honey wine, which is what the Vikings drank.
Yep.
And, excuse me, you add yeast to ciders, you add yeast to beers and stuff, and yeast is the key ingredient, really. I mean, flavor-wise, whatever your stuff is, but the stuff that makes it ferment is yeast.
Yep.
And the chemical reaction is yeast eats sugar, and it has two waste products. One of them is carbon dioxide, and the other one is alcohol. Okay. So that's how you get the alcoholic properties in your brews. And then you go like, well, what about spirits? Well, whiskey is distilled beer. Vodka is distilled wine, mm-hmm. or basically, or not vodka.
Cognac?
Sherry.
Cognac is
a cognac, wine too. Yeah. Distilled, and then whenever, and essentially, if you just take yeast to grain, it's distilled grain alcohol. Mm-hmm. So you take yeast and you add it to fermented grain. You ferment grain and then you distill it, then it turns into vodka. Mm-hmm. But yeast is the key component to all of this.
The vodka's potatoes, ain't it?
It's potatoes, it's grain, it's anything. Okay. Basically all distilled spirits come out clear for the most part, except for wine because of the grapes and the tannins. Mm-hmm. But yeah, whiskey comes out clear. Whenever you ferment whiskey, mm-hmm. it comes out clear. It actually takes its color from the charcoal in the barrels.
Okay.
But when I learned how to do like kind of the home brewing thing, and I don't do beer because it's just too complicated and it's too easy to get off flavors and tastes, and it takes up too much space. But with mead,
it's simple.
You buy some honey. You pour it in a jar. You put some yeast in there. Put it in the closet for a month, and it comes out, and it, you know. But yeah, so I learned about mead, and it was like, there's this guy who wrote a book, and it's called How to Make Mead by Like a Viking. And he was talking how, like, back then, they thought it was magic. They didn't know. They would drink it while it was still bubbling, so you'd have varying alcoholic contents. But they'd have these magical sticks that they'd stir their mead with. You know, so they put their stuff together, and like, not all mead, it's not just those ingredients. You might throw in some herbs and spices, right, and stuff, but you take your stick and you'd stir it. Well, mead or yeast occurs naturally. It's on you right now, and it's just in the air. Well, you stick this stick that's been in bubbling mead before, and you take that stick out.
It's coated in yeast.
It's coated in yeast. And so you take your stick, and then over time, you have a buildup, and it would make your mead faster.
Yeast corn dog, basically.
Right. And that's how they'd make it. So, but I guess back in the day, they had too many other ingredients. Kind of like they do now with some of the weird brews that you see at the store, where it's like made out of blueberries and freaking cow crap. Well, the Germans were like, nope, if it's made of anything besides water, barley, and hops, we'll confiscate it and we'll give you a fine. Like, beer is important, and you're not allowed to screw it up.
For a second there, with the no yeast thing, I was picturing a bunch of unhappy Germans drinking flat beer and eating pita bread.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's the thing we talked about with science and stuff before, is like, just because you don't know that it exists doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Right.
You know?
Just not within your reality at that moment.
You just don't, whatever. Okay, 1914, the first game at Wrigley Field. I don't even know if they still play games at Wrigley Field.
Cubs.
I know, but is Wrigley Field still there, or they build a new stadium?
I'm pretty sure it's still there. That's one that they probably remodeled. The Blues Brothers don't live there anymore. No,
well, all I know is that whenever I was a kid, when Transformers came out, and I was living in the small town, they did not have a local affiliate that had Transformers. But if you got up early enough, the Bozo the Clown show had Transformers. And it was on Superstation, Channel 9. Chicago 9, WTBS.
TBS, yeah, that's what it should have been.
And they'd always show like local news from Chicago and showing the Cubs playing at Wrigley Field. I always, there's a special place in my heart for Wrigley Field, which Bozo the Clown died recently, too.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know if that's in your new business.
But, no, sure is.
But one of the guys who played Bozo, who died, he was like 94 years old. So he had a good long life. Honk, honk.
I did find a story about a clown running for Congress, which I thought that there's plenty of them in there already. We don't need another.
Exactly. So 1914, first game at Wrigley Field. Now getting into what we talk about, the horror In 1940, the Rhythm Club fire at a dance hall in Natchez, Mississippi kills 198 people.
Natchez, Mississippi.
Can you imagine going to a dance and then just burning to death?
Oh man, look at that Great White Concert where all those people had died. Yeah. It's just horrible.
It's, yeah, that's not good.
I ever told you my Natchez story about the tamales?
No.
Oh God. Okay, so I used to work on a riverboat as a chef, as you know. And one of our stops was Natchez. And we go to Natchez, where we dock at, it was called Under the Hill. And what it is, there was a road that came down from the top of the hill down to the docks where the boats were. And there were just lines of bars right there. People were just, it's just like, you'll see some movies that I've seen, they talk about Natchez back in like the 40s and 50s. That's where all the crime was and all the bootlegging and everything was in that area of Under the Hill. Well, there was a bar called Under the Hill Lounge that we'd go to all the time. It was so funny. They had a little person there named JD. He would sit on the bar all day just drinking. And he had a long beard. He looked like a hobbit. It was the funniest shit. But they also sold tamales there. And we'd always go get, he'd get a dozen of tamales and eat them. And they came from Fat Mama's Tamale Shack, which was at the top of the hill. It was like a snowball stand, but she made tamales. Well, I ate those tamales like, I've ate 100 dozen tamales from the time I worked on the boat. Fast forward years later, I'm with my ex-in-laws, and my father-in-law had just got back from Natchez on a business trip. And he starts telling me about how, while he was down there, the big news was there's this woman who's had a tamale shop for years. And I said, it wasn't Big Mama's Tamales, was it? He says, yeah, that's the name of it. And I said, well, what happened? They found out she'd been putting cats in her tamales, and her freezer was full of dead cats and shit. And I told him, I said, if you ever hear of a tamale place putting cats in the tamales, that's some good fucking tamales. You want to try them at least once.
I'm down.
Jeez. True story. I've eaten cat before, basically, is what I'm saying right now, dude.
We've got this neighborhood cat, dude. And it's sweet. It'll come right up to you. It'll like purr and run itself through your legs and stuff. And it's one of the neighbor's cats, but it just roams free. It's not feral. It belongs to somebody. It's got a collar, and it's a sweetheart. But that bitch is a hunter.
Cats are mean, man.
Dude, this guy, I've seen him on the roof, like hunting stuff, like on the neighbor's roof. You're like, what is a cat after? And you see him up there just like stalking a bird or something. And it's like, I was driving, you know, pulling out of my driveway and driving down the street, and I see the cat and he's all hunched down, and I look over and there's a baby bird flopping around. And I like, I don't know what I was going to do, because I ain't going to go like, put the baby bird in a box. I get up and I like chase the cat off, and I like kind of shoo the bird into the bushes.
I'm like, die later when I'm not around.
Yeah, right.
Not on my watch.
I drive down the street. I look in my rear view. Cat runs across the street. I'm like, yeah, that bird's gone. This morning, going to work, I'm driving out. I look over, and this cat is like white and orange. It's mostly white and orange. And again,
like Morris. Is Morris the cat?
He's skinny. He's a little tabby cat. And I look, I'm like, what's that cat got? He's got a live rat in its mouth, and it's like kicking. He's like shaking it as he's running across the street. I'm like, well,
good on, his business,
good
dude.
On you, man.
Yeah.
Take care of that rat. I'm sure the neighbors will be happy you got him.
You know, on the cat subject, another story I ran into this morning is a news station in Phoenix, Arizona. For whatever reason, they thought this was like a cool thing to do. Apparently, this cat had got stuck on top of a pole over the weekend. So Monday, they start a live feed on Facebook, just of a camera pointing at the cat stuck on top of the pole. And people are like commenting.
Like, why don't you get him down?
Why don't you call the fire department to pick up the damn cat? So they have hours of a Facebook live video of just a cat sitting on top of a pole looking around. And eventually the utility company came and got the cat down. But yeah, it was the dumbest. They thought that was big news to put on Facebook. that's it's not like it's some podunk town. It's Phoenix, Arizona.
That's the media for you. There's just like, I remember like when we were supposed to get one of those polar vortex storms or whatever, and I felt bad because, you know, it was just some intern. It was like some girl that was going to like make her name, and she was going to become the next Diane Sawyer or something. And she's standing in a coat, and she's out on the street, and she's like, yeah, the winter storm's coming. And she's had a bucket of water. This was Houston. She's got a bucket of water, and she's explaining that if the temperature drops, this water will, like, water freezes when it gets below 32 degrees, and right now it's 38, and it's on its way. And she's waiting for this bucket to freeze.
She doesn't know how things work. She doesn't know physics.
No. She was sent out there by the news crew to stand outside and wait for the freeze to come.
We used to play pranks on the new person, too, at work.
And I'm sitting there watching this being like, oh, my God. Like, you're the man on the street, though.
But also with the Phoenix thing, because they put it on Facebook Live, the police department received over 100 911 calls from across the country of cat lovers. It's no bullshit complaining about what the TV station was doing. That's and awesome. Wanting somebody to save the cat.
That is awesome. That is so cool.
I'll find the picture later to show you the cat just sitting up there.
I was watching some documentary. It was like National Geographic, and it was talking about how humans, how we kind of departed from our simian ancestors. And the whole documentary was talking about, at some certain point, some group of these pre-human simians found themselves in a place where food was plentiful, predators were not around much, and so their ability to sit and actually think of things, because, you know, normally most animals, they're worried about like their next meal and avoiding death. That's mm-hmm. that's pretty much how they exist. But these group of proto-humans found themselves in a comfortable spot, and it's what allowed them to kind of become self-conscious and then move towards what we have then become.
Right.
And I was sitting there watching it. I was listening to that and watching it. And my cynical mind was like, "That can't possibly be true." Which I'm sure it is. Like in a biological, evolutionary, and scientific sense, it very most likely is what happened. Mm-hmm. But my cynical mind is like, no, because when there ain't something to worry about, you come up with shit to worry about, and you end up pointing a camera at a cat on a pole. Yeah. And you're like, everybody, look at this. They would have figured out something to do. They would have figured out some way to mess it up.
Funny if somebody would have went up with a BB gun.
I know.
Pepper the cat in the ass, make him jump down.
Jeez.
I wouldn't do that, by the way. I'm just saying it would have been funny.
Yeah. All right. On this date in 1985, New Coke was released.
That was a bust.
Dude, do you remember that?
It wasn't as bad as the when Pepsi changed their formula.
Dude, I remember my dad was a Coke drinker.
New Coke was like a big deal.
Dad, my father he drank Coca-Cola, and he drank it in these glass bottles, and he'd buy them by the case. And so 1985, I was 9 years old. I remember my dad coming home with like 12 cases of Coke, like in the glass bottles, and stacking them up, being like, they're about to change it. Bill Cosby's been saying they're going to change it. And I don't trust it. He came home with a six-pack of New Coke, and he took a sip and was like, threw it away. He's like, no, that tastes like Pepsi. I'm done. I just remember that. Like, and I remember being a kid just being like, what's the big deal? And then finding out that everybody's reaction was the same.
Right. Like, nobody liked it.
Everything across the country, like, I was like, wow, people really give a shit.
We ought to do an episode on marketing failures by different, because Pepsi came, right? Was it Pepsi Ice or Pepsi Clear that they came out with that everybody was just...
Well, the thing was, and I've read about this, because when I was in college, it was kind of a marketing... I got my degree in marketing. It was talking about, sometimes when all of the numbers are right, that you have to rely on heritage, because the thing with New Coke, and the reason why, is because Pepsi was actually winning. Whenever it came to like the cola wars, mm-hmm. Pepsi was winning. Market share was growing. Pepsi was kicking ass, and Pepsi had a sweeter, crisper flavor than Coca-Cola did. And so they did their market research. They did all their taste tests. Why do you like Pepsi more? And because of these reasons. And then they formulated the new Coke, and they went out and they test marketed it, and it was a resounding success. It beat Pepsi in taste tests. It beat Coke in taste tests. Like, the product itself was golden. It was like
all the signs were there that it was going to succeed.
But what they didn't think about was that they had like 100 years of legacy in that original product, that whenever they had the audacity to change it, everybody just went and grabbed on to that legacy without even really giving the new product a chance.
Right.
And so it was in my marketing course that they were talking about, like, sometimes you just gotta like they didn't ask people, what would you think if we
got rid of
this and gave you this instead? What they said was, do you like this better? And I remember this being, when I was working in the bars, my flavor profiles have changed since, but like Miller Lite, I never used to like Miller Lite. I still don't like it. Like, it's still like
the bottom of my
list. But Miller Lite always just had this kind of weird salty back flavor that its competitors didn't. Coors and Bud didn't have. Miller had this. And hey, good on you. It's just the way it tastes, right? Some people like Domino's and some people like Papa John's, whatever. But I was at a bar and they were doing a taste test, and I got two bottles, and I tasted one and it tasted familiar. I tasted another one. I didn't like it. And I was like, yeah, I like this one better. And she's like, but this one, you know, would you agree that it has more flavor than this one? I was like, yeah, more bad flavor. And so she took that as a yes. And she moved on to the next person, left me with both bottles, and, you know, I finished them. Of course, because free beer.
What, yeah, I got to waste it.
But then, like, a couple of months later, a commercial came out that was, like, in a survey of actual drinkers, and it was, like, filmed inside of bars. I wasn't in the commercial, but, like...
Similar situation,
and it was a commercial, and, you know, it's like, yeah. And then at the bottom, it said, admission of more flavor does not indicate preference. So yeah, you could have said this tastes like warmed over dog shit, and it would have been like, but
is it more
you recognize its prominence, so therefore like check the list. That's how marketing works. In 2005, the first YouTube video came out.
Think about how that has just exploded.
12 years.
YouTube is pissing a lot of people off right now, too, though.
With all their censorship. And
well, not just that. All the people that they're cutting their monetary stuff with, because they haven't. It's a bunch of bullshit that they're doing. The little guy.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like with their censorship and their monetary stuff, it's like if you say anything offensive, we'll define offensive. We'll look at our terms of service. It says offensive. What does that mean?
Yeah, it's kind of a blanket
and so it's
statement.
Very, very. It depends on who at YouTube happens to be watching the video and decides.
Right.
Or if comments get sideways, then they're like demonetized. Mm-hmm. And that's not taking a side. That happens actually on both sides.
Right.
But yeah. All right. On this date, April 23rd, 1564, William Shakespeare was born.
Kind of a big deal.
Just a little bit. 1928, Shirley Temple was born. She sang the song about the good ship
Lollipop.
Yep.
On the good ship.
1936, Roy Orbison, one of the best singer-songwriters I've ever lived.
Yep.
Love Roy Orbison. 1939, The Fall Guy, Mr. Lee Majors.
Lee Majors, and also on Ash vs. Evil Dead.
39, man. He's getting up there.
Yeah. Well, he plays Ash's dad in the show, so.
1957, we talked about her in a past episode, because that was an anniversary of her death. But Ms. Jan Hooks, Adobe. Mm-hmm. In 1977, you can't see him, but he's there, Mr. John Cena.
You know, he's going to be the new Duke Nukem.
I know.
The Duke Nukem reboot.
Is Duke Nukem still a thing?
Well, they re-released a Duke Nukem game, I want to say it was 10 or 12 years ago. So that's the last game. But I love Duke Nukem, man. The thing about it is, the true quintessential Duke Nukem character is not going to do well in the Me Too age.
True.
So I'm not sure how they're going to. There's no way they're going to do traditional Duke Nukem. You know, in the reboot video game, it opens up with him taking a piss at the urinal, and you can hear it splashing and shit.
Hashtag Me Too. All right. Notable deaths on this date in 1995. We lost Mr. Howard Cosell. That was a bad impression.
That was pretty bad.
In 2007, Russian President Boris Yeltsin. That dude was just hilarious. He was in charge of everything that happened after the collapse. I mean, really, like, how can you be a world leader whenever your country goes from half the world to not?
Right.
Like, he just got drunk a lot.
We didn't care.
And more power to him.
Yeah. You know? Like,
and that is it for old business. Let's take a break.
Just tell me one thing, Burke. You're going out there to destroy them, right? Not to study. Not to bring back. But to wipe them out.
That's the plan.
All right, people, on the ready line. Are you me?
Yeah!
Are you me?
Yeah!
Are you me? Yeah! You on the ready line, Marie? Get down to die! Get on the ready line!
Nothing back here.
Look, I'm telling you, there's something moving and it ain't us.
Get them out of there! They cut the power.
How could they cut the power, man? They're animals.
Let's get into a little bit of a...
news.
Don't have a whole lot
meters,
this week,
man.
But first, I'm sure you've heard by now, which if you're not out there, you're not familiar with the Schlitterbahn line of water parks. We have two within driving distance of where Billy and I live, but they've been sued, and one of the co-owners has actually been arrested at this point for negligent homicide, for
really?
Manslaughter, involuntary manslaughter. Have you heard about this?
No.
In Kansas is a Schlitterbahn that has a water slide that at one time was being billed as the highest water slide in the world. Well, in 2016, a 10-year-old boy was decapitated on this ride. And apparently what it was, where this ride is going down, there's a set of a hoop net that goes down a little bit. And the tube he was on, for what they said, people at the park, they've given statements that this particular tube, it was one of those like tubes where three or four people can sit on it.
Mm-hmm.
They had issues with it before catching air, but they kept putting it back in service, and it caught air, and one of the hoops decapitated this young man.
Oh no.
So it was declared a deadly weapon, and charges were filed for involuntary manslaughter against the water park operator and the co-owner. So the operator of that particular location was charged, and the co-owner of Schlitterbahn. Yeah, it's a pretty big deal, because the thing about it is it sets a pretty significant precedent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a 19-month investigation, pretty gruesome thing. But yeah, a water slide can be listed as a deadly weapon.
See, I would have think to list it as a deadly weapon, there has to be intent. Like, I understand.
But they're saying it was negligent because they
Negligence is one thing.
Right.
Negligence is something all to, you know, like, yeah. But a deadly weapon.
There wasn't, yeah.
It's like you have, it has to be as if you're setting a trap. But,
apparently during the 182 days the ride was operated, there were 13 total injuries on the one specific ride. Two concussions, one 15-year-old girl actually went temporarily blind from hitting her head so hard on one of the poles. And then, of course, the young boy, they got killed.
Wow.
Yep. Like I said, this sets a pretty major precedent for amusement parks. I'd be scared as hell to own one.
Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't want to get too crazy with your rides, that's for sure. Alrighty, moving on. The Saturn Awards, 2018 Saturn Awards, have been announced. This has been its 44th year right now, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Saturn Awards, but they, of course, give their just due to the horror. Mm-hmm. They actually have a horror category and stuff. But they, for their movie of the year, it's the usual suspects that we've had. Well, for best horror film, it's 47 Meters Down, Annabelle Creation, Better Watch Out, Get Out, It, and Mother are going to be nominated for Best Horror. They got Best Thriller, Best Director. They got Black Panther, Shape of Water, Wonder Woman, Star Wars Last Jedi, Get Out, War for the Planet of the Apes, and Blade Runner 2049. Saturn Awards are something that we'd be more into than the Oscars.
Because
it's aimed towards our kind of stuff, but they also give cartoon awards out for television series also. So they have best horror series, which that one has a whole bunch of standards listed that we would all enjoy. But we'll definitely keep an eye out for the Saturn Awards to see who wins what and announce those whenever they come out. But the full list can be found online of all the nominees. They have a lot of categories. For best, we find the horror television series, American Horror Story, Ash vs. Evil Dead, Fear of the Walking Dead, Preacher, The Strain, Teen Wolf, and The Walking Dead. So, that's where we're at. The Saturn Awards.
Yeah, I stopped watching Walking Dead. I just got tired of the monologuing.
A lot of people have stopped watching Walking Dead. It's kind of an issue right now. They're concerned about the future of the franchise. So,
I mean, I love it. I loved it, and it, you know, like, I defended it in its down moments. Because, you know, it's like peaks and valleys and stuff. But we're talking about marketing earlier, and one of the things that a lot of companies do, and it's really frustrating because the reality of it is formula works. And if you doubt what I'm saying, watch Star Trek. Star Trek, with the exception of maybe the original series, who was really kind of trying to break new ground, all of the following series, it's pretty much the same show over and over and over again. It's the stories are different, but they don't really break a whole lot of new ground.
They don't episode get away from to episode. The formula that worked.
The thing about Walking Dead that made it great was that it was a human drama, and then you had this apocalypse and these dangerous zombies that are running around. But the reality of it was, yes, there are horrible human beings, and there are people who have been driven mad by the apocalypse, but the human element got so, and this is through multiple seasons, or just, it's like, I get it, there are bad guys, can't we find some like breakthrough episode where you team up with somebody else where all you're doing is fighting zombies, mm-hmm. instead of constantly fighting against just another bad guy, only worse than the last bad right. guy. It's like you're walking through a video game trying to level up to the level boss, and then you've forgotten about all those little turtles that are jumping around trying to bite you.
Right.
It's like, this gets boring. You go through entire episodes and you don't see a single zombie, and all you see is the bad guy being like, I'm a bad guy, for hours. for hours, and you're just like, come on, man.
Well, what are we building to? You know, that's the thing.
Right.
What's the reward?
Because what's going to end up happening is they're going to kill this bad guy and destroy all the infrastructure around that bad guy and get in a car and go to someplace else.
Right.
And there's going to be an even worse bad guy. But and he's just going to, what, going to talk some more? Like, I can't. I'm out. Like, give me more zombies.
Well, it is possible for a successful series, to run too long.
It is.
And we see that with comic books a lot. You know, you try to get every dollar out of it, so you never end. You never give the satisfaction of that, the ending. You know, that that build to your reward.
Right, exactly. Well, the comic books are open-ended, for like TV series is too.
A lot of them are, but like Preacher, that's one thing I love about Preacher, is Preacher ended.
Well.
And there were no more.
Well, you know? You're never going to be able to end a series like a Spider-Man or Superman.
Mm-hmm.
But what you should be able to do is you end this particular series, this story. You know, you say, okay, well, at some point, Kal-El finds a Kryptonian colony somewhere, and he goes there and he meets somebody and he falls in love and just lives there now.
Right.
And he loses his powers and he lives happily ever after. And lights come down, curtains come down on Superman. And then you can start over again, knowing that eventually he's going to find his way there, right, and have an interesting story, but just Lex Luthor and Brainiac and all that, they've been around for too long.
Yeah.
It's just not interesting anymore.
Right.
So, yeah, Walking Dead. Unless something, like, I haven't seen, when Walking Dead, for whenever it first came out, it was like, spoiler alerts, and everybody was like, oh my god, and Twitter was just all ablaze, and it was like the top trending thing. I haven't seen a thing that makes you want to even, like, oh, we heard Carl died. I was like, oh, really? Yeah, I saw him on like some Facebook post talking about wanting to go to college, so I get it. Like, I don't even care.
Right.
You know, I'm anyway.
Okay. Friday the 13th franchise is in kind of a stalemate right now, which is, God knows when we're going to see any additions to the franchise again. Last March, they were supposed to begin a new reboot from Platinum Dunes with Breck Eisner directing, and the script by Aaron Guzikowski. That has been put on hold. Things got shut down before they even started filming. And at this point, the rights to the franchise are set to revert back to Warner Brothers. New Line Cinema sometime this year, and there's a lawsuit being pushed by Victor Miller, who's one of the original film's writers. It's not looking good for the Friday the 13th franchise at this point, as far as getting a reboot, because litigation by one of the original writers could put it on hold for a long time, and they're trying to make a new movie, they want to make a new movie, but they just, everything's in limbo right now.
Can't get it off the ground.
Right.
And yet they're doing another Nightmare reboot.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that is supposed to be coming. Which I'm kind of looking forward to. But that's pretty much it for new business this week. Do you have any stories you want to bring up? Anything that you took note of as of late?
Not specifically, no. Nothing that I can think of. I think we should take a break.
We can do that.
We'll get into the actual show. I guess I'm losing my voice. That's kind of weird. We'll be right back.
Looks just like the one next to it, and the one next to that, and the one next to that. A young couple live in it.
Give Ken a kiss.
You are so unlucky.
With their three children. And something more.
Remember last night? Do you remember when you woke up and you said you're here?
Uh-huh.
Well, who did you mean? Who's here? TV people.
Something's funny going on here next door. Something,
We were wondering if maybe you had experienced any disturbances lately.
What kind of disturbances?
I don't know what hovers over this house. I've never sensed anything like it.
That thing is in there with my baby!
There are hundreds.
Now Steven Spielberg crosses a frightening new threshold into a world within our own. Its form is revealed.
What is it?
Its focus is clear. And the games are over. Poltergeist. It knows what scares you.
Here we are again.
Yes, so like I said earlier in the show with the passing of D, just made me think of just some of the more badass women we've seen in horror movies over the years, which they've been... Horror has always kind of allowed for that female heroine to be there.
And we are in a... we're in the Me Too universe these days. And so, of course, a lot of old horror gets kind of pigeonholed and spoken of as exploitive. And to be fair, you know, we're a couple of guys talking about whatever... So, you know, who are we to say? But, you know, at the end of the day, sex sells. So, right. If you have a pretty girl who's going to be in a movie, and especially in the horror genre where things like nudity are not really verboten, or, you know, they don't need to be tasteful in order to be accepted. You know, so you have a lot of women in these movies that are the victim, or, you know, they're in a lot of cases they're actually brutally the victim. Mm. And so they get kind of spoken down upon. I was actually on a... I don't use it very much. I used to be on it a lot more. Now I just kind of monitor it to make sure there's not a whole lot of porn on my comments. But Tumblr. But Tumblr is a good spot to see some like essays and some discussions. And somebody was pointing out, somebody commented on this one guy's thing about, he was talking about Friday the 13th, and somebody comments like, "Oh, well, that's just your male dominated, you know, you just want to see women die." And this guy knew his Friday the 13th. And he posted a bunch of stats, and he was saying series-wide that there's more men killed than women.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as, like, sex symbols, there's more, like, men getting killed coming out of the shower or, you know, doing traditionally, like damsel in distress things than women are. And yes, there's more female nudity, but... ultimately, the heroines inside of the Friday the 13th series, the heroes, the survivors, are mostly female.
Right.
And...
blonde.
Well, blonde and badass.
Yeah.
Like, they start off being like, "Oh my God!" And then later on, they're sitting there hacking them away. So, but it's... with like the Friday the 13th series, it's pretty well balanced.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing, you know, the standard movie formula for a long time, especially for action movies and thrillers, is the damsel in distress being saved by the guy. A lot of horror movies have flipped that script, so to speak.
And have for a long time.
Right, and that's one of the reasons why when people, you know, just went nuts because of the Wonder Woman movie and Gal Gadot and the powerful female, and everybody was like, "What about Ripley? Mm-hmm. Why are you guys saying that this is, like, groundbreaking in the first one?" this happened before.
Right. Absolutely. And because Ripley, I mean, Alien came out in 79.
Right.
I mean, that was a long time ago.
But granted, in the first Alien, she wasn't as badass as she was in the second. In Aliens, she wasn't as badass as she was in Alien.
And that's true, but you can say
but
the
she,
same
but
thing.
But she grew. And but in the, even in that initial role, she in that single movie, she grew in that movie. From cowering down from the alien to coming back and you're not going to mess with my cat.
Well, also, I don't remember her actually cowering.
Well, just,
I remember her standing there watching people die and being like, holy crap. But right. Whenever the shit hit the fan, she stood
she
up.
She stood up, and, yeah, and took control.
And took control. And the same thing can be said about, like, Terminator. You know?
Yeah, in the first one, she was kind of the...
She, well, yeah.
She was, grew within that movie.
But then in the second one,
she was Billy Badass.
Yeah, she was... There was no messing with Sarah Connor after that. And, it's like, oh, was it a man that saved her? No, it was a robot.
Right.
And a 12-year-old kid. You know? Right. So,
so horror is full of badass women.
It really is.
For a long time. You know, and we'll start off with, spoke Friday the 13th, we'll start off with Alice from Friday the 13th. First movie, of course, Jason Voorhees wasn't the main killer yet. It was his mom.
A woman.
She cut her head off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she rose up and tore shit up.
Well, and Pamela ran around stabbing everybody.
Right, yeah. The primary antagonist. She was pretty badass. For sure. From there, we can go... I know you're not too familiar.
Well, through the whole Friday the 13th series, I think all of the survivors are female. Except for in part 4.
Well...
In part 1, it was Alice.
In 6, he had Tommy as the main protagonist.
Hold on. Let's go through it real quick.
Okay.
In part 1, the main antagonist was Pamela.
Pam.
And Alice was the survivor.
Uh-huh.
In part 2...
It was Jenny Field.
Female...
Amy Steele was the winner. Actress. Yep.
In part 3, it was another female. In the end.
Yes. Yeah.
In part 4, it was Corey Feldman with his sister.
Right.
In part 5, it was Tommy Jarvis.
Yeah.
In part 6, it was Tommy Jarvis.
Yes, yeah.
In part 7, it was a psychic girl.
The girl, yeah, that woke him up.
In part 8, it was... who killed him in part 8? How did he go down? Well, hey,
they've had some strong women in Friday the 13th, needless to say. They haven't all played... All the movies haven't had women playing the role of the victim.
Right.
And like I said, that happens a lot in horror. And it's been happening for a long time. In Texas Chainsaw Massacre,
mm-hmm.
The lone survivor was Sally, played by Marilyn Burns. That was in 1974.
Mm-hmm.
You know, horror's been doing this for a really, really long time. They've had
in The Shining, it was Wendy.
Yep. In Hellraiser, it was Christy Cotton. Hellraiser 1 and 2. And, you know, in Hellraiser, this girl's in the hospital. She has no idea what's about to happen. The Cenobites show up. She gets in their faces. You know, so basically, you know, she figures out what's going on, and she makes a deal with them. She's not scared of them at all. You know, she stands up to them immediately. And that happens all the time in horror, like we were talking about Ripley. Ripley was just a badass total. In the Hatchet series, in the second one, is Mary Beth is the woman that goes against Victor Crowley and is able to survive everything. It happens time and time and time again. Mila Jovovich in the Resident Evil franchise, Kate Beckinsale in the Underworld franchise. Those are very, very strong, powerful female characters. We went over Alice already.
What we're saying, guys, is that if you're looking for representation... And you've been looking at, like, romantic comedies, you're in the wrong genre here.
Right.
Like, if you're looking for strong, badass women...
Look at horror.
Look at horror, because...
Jamie Lee Curtis in Halloween 1 and 2, and also returning in...
Nev Campbell was... Courtney Cox in Scream.
Yeah, look, Nev Campbell handled shit when she was in Scream. There's just, like I said, time and time again, there's tons of strong women. Heather Langenkamp is Nancy in Nightmare on Elm Street. you know, she was not going to let Freddie get her.
She ended up dying in what, part three?
I think it was part three, yeah.
Was it Dream Warriors that she ended up dying?
Dream Warriors was part three, so.
Okay.
Yep.
But she came back to face that.
Yep.
So, she was a fallen hero.
Clarice Starling went face to face with one of the maddest individuals around. made it through it. A guy that was very controlling over everybody else. You know, think about the men that he had just fucked with their heads so bad that
they swallowed their own tongues.
Right. And Clarice, she just took it all in stride and went with it. Used him to her own means. I spit on your grave. Woman fell victim to a bunch of men, but didn't need a man to save her. She came back and she tore their asses up.
Yes, she did.
That was one of those movies. We talk about those movies all the time where we used to go to the video store and see these boxes and everything. I spit in your grave. I used to see that box all the time and just... This crazy, crazy movie, man.
Yeah, that's one that's not—it's not fun to watch.
No, that's a
Last House on the Left, sort of like that real heavy exploitation stuff.
Oh yeah, and even going as far back as Alfred Hitchcock, there was a Tippi Hedren who played Melanie in The Birds, who was the main protagonist in that one. Virginia Madsen, who was in Candyman. There's just time and time again in horror movies, you see the same thing.
Well, the whole American Horror Story series.
Yeah.
I mean, that's... I still have from season two that song, that nun song, the... Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah.
That'll get up on you, man.
And then further on in Nightmare on Elm Street, you had Lisa Wilcox, who played Alice in a... Four and five, who was able to get the best of Freddy Krueger twice. So anybody else come to mind that you can think of?
Well, I mean, we just listed off a bunch. We could go into more detail on, like I said, like Sarah Connor. You know, Sarah... There's no... other than Ripley... That should be actually... Ripley should be the name of the next award. Like, they ought to have a golden Ripley.
Right.
I mean, because...
For badass female character.
I mean, she was just unkillable.
Right.
I mean, those aliens are mean as hell. But, I mean, she out-survived... I mean... There's just no stopping her.
Right. There's D right there.
Let's see here. Again, Sarah Connor, Linda Hamilton. You know, and she's in there doing push-ups and, you know,
just building herself up. And
killing it.
When she decided she was getting out of there, she got out of there.
You got Total Recall on. I mean, Sharon Stone, dude.
Sharon Stone, true. I mean, Adrienne Barbeau in so many movies. She was Swamp Thing, of course, is what she's... I like her most in. But she was badass. She could handle a gun and work for the CIA. She was a lone survivor in the lab that night.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me. So, yeah, dude. Then you have Dee Wallace from Cujo and the Howling.
Yes.
I mean...
Cujo, she was... very strong. She had the mother survival instinct to protect her son.
And there's no... It's one of those things like... that's just pure nature.
Right.
There's no... like...
It's a natural instinct.
Could it have been a dude? Maybe, but all the dudes got their ass eaten.
Right. Yeah, they could. they didn't go about it the right way.
Yeah, literally all of them. You know, there's Evelyn Ankers, who played Gwen in the original Wolfman.
Uh-huh.
You know, she won.
Right.
There's Michelle Pfeiffer in Wolf.
Yes.
You know. Was Michelle Pfeiffer in any other horror movies other than Batman Returns?
Yeah, the only one I can think of is Batman Returns. I don't think she was in any other ones.
She was. She was in... What Lies Beneath.
Okay.
With Harrison Ford.
Okay.
Where the whole time you think she's being haunted, but she's being warned because he killed that girl.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
she ends up coming back that. And whooping his ass.
Yeah.
There's Julie Adams, who played Kay in Creature from the Black Lagoon. Mm,
right, yeah.
See, there's Brenda Carter from Hills Have Eyes.
Mm-hmm.
That is a rough-ass movie, dude.
The original and the remake are both rough-ass movies, dude. The sequel, not so much. But that first one, definitely, it'll hit your soul a little bit.
It's always whenever they work so hard and they finally win, and then there's reinforcements against them.
Yeah,
and
you're like, then you realize there's some more out there.
Oh, no. Joe Beth Williams from Poltergeist.
Yes, she was going to protect her. She was going to get her baby back.
She had to go to hell to get her.
Yeah, almost. Went to purgatory.
Yeah.
But she did it. And then when they tried to come back after him, she said, not my baby. She was not going to let her kids go.
Let's see, what was her name? Bijou Phillips?
Yeah, and Hostel 2. She was badass, man. She didn't take shit from anybody. And she didn't have to. They did not realize how much money she had. They told her she had to get a tattoo. She was like, fine. I'll transfer the money now.
This is one, but I mean, she was a badass. She was a survivor, but Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio in The Abyss.
Yep.
I mean, The Abyss is one of those, I don't think it's really forgotten, but I think it's underrated how truly horrific that is, to be so far down and just surrounded by just tons and tons of pressure.
Right.
And what that would do to your psyche.
Yeah.
And then you have a psycho that's running around fucking with shit.
Right.
Not to mention the alien, which the alien turned out to be cool. But
Michael Biehn was so good in that movie, dude.
This is a badass movie.
I haven't watched that in a while. It's a three booby woman.
What's her name?
Yeah, she's pretty badass, so she got killed. Wait, Dee's about to jump up with that machine gun in a second.
All right. We're almost there. Boom. Murder.
Total Recall is a great movie, by the way. That's what we got playing in the background.
Okay, so then Kathy Bates won the Academy Award for Misery.
Yep. And she was a mean, mean woman
there.
You
don't get any more badass than that.
Well, in the end, James Caan ended up killing her, but still, she was badass. And
dude,
it took a lot to kill her. He had to beat her with an old, old typewriter, one of those.
He had to go through hell to beat her. She didn't get out of the cock-a-doodle car. You got old, good old Sherry Moon.
Yes, Sherry Moon has played a lot of badass women. She played a badass woman in 31, and of course in House of a Thousand Corpses and The Devil's Rejects, and soon to be the sequel, Three from Hell.
That's it.
Yeah, Rob Zombie picked a winner with that one.
I don't know her name, but Ginger from the Ginger Snaps.
Yes, yeah. She was the main antagonist in that movie, man. She was a very strong character.
And we talked about in our werewolf episode a couple weeks ago, I hadn't seen Ginger Snaps, but I mentioned Trick or Treat and Anna Paquin in The Werewolf, where she flips a switch on that serial killer.
Right.
Boom. Just wolves out and just
You know, there's a figure that, speaking of Trick or Treat, just real quick, a segue, there's a new figure with, is Sam Unmasked, which is pretty badass.
With the pumpkin
dude.
Head?
Yep.
Yes.
Because he looks evil, man. You should see that thing.
He's cool. Who can forget Sissy Spacek and Crick Carey?
Yes.
You know, like,
they pushed her to that limit, man.
That movie. What, I mean, first of all, that's a Brian De Palma film. Sissy Spacek was perfect in that role.
Yeah.
She played that conflicted little girl so well. And yeah, she did, you know, she got beat up on. But the whole point of the story was that, that there's that rage. Mm-hmm. And she blew up. Dude, she kills everybody. Everybody dies.
Right.
You don't get more badass than that. And yeah, it's like, okay, well, she bullied. Yeah. Was she picked on? Yeah. Was she some sort of weird teenage archetype character? Yeah. But you just push her hard enough.
You push too far, right.
And she killed everybody. And there's not a whole lot of, I mean, there's a lot of sympathy for Carrie, but not a lot of sympathy for the people she killed.
No.
You're like, they more they or less deserve it.
Yeah. So they push her to that point, you know?
Yeah, Megan Fox and Jennifer's Body.
Yeah.
Was taken over by the dame. The,
I got that movie somewhere around here. I haven't watched it in a while. I need to throw that one in.
Badass women in horror. Reagan from The Exorcist.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's listed among the some of the most frightening movies that has ever been made.
Mm-hmm.
And your main female antagonist was like a 13-year-old girl.
Right. And she survived the whole ordeal when in part two.
Yep. Made it to the sequel. That's yes. All you gotta do, survive to the sequel. It's something they talk about a lot in Screams. Just make it to the sequel.
Well, there's that movie Hollywood Shuffle, which we've talked about on here once in a while, with the old Robert Townsend movie, where it's just like a bunch of skits and parodies and everything in it, but he's talking to this actor, and he goes, how do you know a good script? And he goes, does your character die in the script? It's like, no, it's a good script. Yeah, the sequel. It's all about sequels.
You can't get any more well-acted or frightening than Glenn Close in Fatal Attraction.
Oh, she played a good crazy-ass woman.
Again, sometimes there's a little bit of stereotype going on, but man! she had it going. She had it.
She boiled a rabbit.
Yeah. I ever tell you, dude, never mind, I'll... It's not a story for this. Well, actually, it is. So, my mom would tell a story about how when she was a kid, she had a pet rabbit. And she came home from school one day. The rabbit was gone, and they were having dinner. And my grandfather cooked my mom's pet rabbit.
Oh, damn, dude. That's rough.
It is rough. But, I mean, it was...
Was he raising it to cook it, though?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
He was raising it to cook it.
She thought it was a pet.
She had a pet.
You don't name those.
Yeah, don't name your dinner. Yeah. You got Rose McGowan from Scream and yep. Death Proof. I mean, in Scream she got taken out, but she was still pretty badass.
Yeah.
Death Proof with the machine gun on her leg.
She was very badass in that one.
It's not really a horror movie, but a lot of the scenes that they were in were pretty scary with the replicants. But Daryl Hannah in
Blade Runner. Yeah.
I mean, she was rough.
Oh yeah.
she kicked some serious ass.
She was very badass.
And then finally we're going to probably tip the scales here with a double whammy. Gina Davis in Beetlejuice took no shit from nobody.
Oh no.
She was the happy homemaker. She had her little flowery wallpaper and her cute little dress on. When the sandworm attacked her, she punched it in the nose.
Yeah. When she got pushed to the edge, she fought back.
And at the end of the day, she's the one that defeated Beetlejuice.
Right.
Riding that sandworm in and
eating
him up. You know? And then, of course, Winona Ryder with Lydia Deetz. I mean, she had
no fear.
She had some fear, but
eventually, yeah. But initially, yeah, she had none.
Yeah, she was wearing that red dress, like, oh shit, I gotta marry this guy. But man, that is a
it's a pretty concise list of badass women,
and it's a you say might be a short list, but it's not really that short,
right?
I mean, it's there's some significant, unlike. Did I even mention? I'm sure I did, but Wendy from The Shining.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they got out, you know, as meek and mild as she was, she bonked him on the head and they got out and right. They ran through the maze.
I mean, we went all the way back to 1974. They've been strong women in horror movies for a long time.
From the beginning.
Horror fans love their women.
We do.
And we don't need them in the kitchen barefoot and pregnant. We like them being strong. So
that's it. Grab an axe. And I think that's going to do it for this episode. What was that? Number 80.
Wow, dude.
I know, dude.
God, we're going to be at 100 here pretty soon. You realize that, huh?
I know. Every time we say, man, that's another one. Like, episode 80. Well, by the time this comes out, we should definitely have a venue because this comes out a couple weeks after when I'm actually talking about it. But I've been scouting some venues for the next Halloween horror show.
Once we get a venue and we get a date, then we can go ahead and just start seeing exactly what kind of attractions we can have for you to partake in.
But, man, I think with that, we're just going to go ahead and put a fork in it.
Yep.
And we'll see you next time.
Later.
She's a crew.